Thanks for tuning in to the Women Offshore podcast. This show is a part of the Oil and Gas Global Network, known as OGGN. OGGN has a ton of podcasts for you to listen to about all sorts of topics in energy. If you're looking for more great energy podcasts, I'll leave a link in the show notes for you to check out what's playing at OGGN. On today's show, we're exploring what it's like to jump from an offshore career to something that's a little unconventional by talking with a hiring manager in tech. But we're also going to learn from her wisdom as a woman in tech, knowing that there are many similarities that women face regardless of the industry that they're in. This is the Women Offshore Podcast. I'm your host, Ali Cedeno, a mariner and founder of Women Offshore. Women Offshore is a 501c3 nonprofit organization supporting a diverse workforce on the water. Women Offshore was started in 2017, first as a blog website. We have evolved, though, into a nonprofit organization, and since then, it occurred to our board of directors that we needed to rewrite our mission, knowing that we have evolved from that blog in 2017. If you now look at Women Offshore, you'll see that our mission statement has changed. The Women Offshore Foundation propels women into meaningful careers through access to a worldwide community and professional development resources, while raising awareness amongst industry leaders and decision makers about issues affecting women on the water. Now, in this episode, I want to talk about that first clause and what that means. As a community and through our resources, we propel women into meaningful careers. What does that mean exactly? From my viewpoint, that has meant women have utilized our platform to find jobs and ask for what they want on board and in the workplace. But perhaps even more importantly, many have talked to me about the pride that they have found in their careers through connecting with other women at Women Offshore. Being the only woman, you can often feel like you don't belong and question if working on the water is right for you. For much of my own career, I wasn't prideful, even though I had an awesome job where I navigated ships all over the world. I mean, how cool is that? Once I started working on the Women Offshore website, I became so proud of the women I was writing about, and in turn, I was proud of my own career. Going back to our new mission statement, I wonder if you also caught something important. The words Women Offshore Foundation propels women into meaningful careers through access to a worldwide community and professional development resources does not say anything about what kind of careers. We've seen women utilize our resources for both offshore and shoreside roles. We know that your experience offshore is valuable, and we want you to have a meaningful career, no matter what path you choose. There are many, many paths you can choose in the maritime industry, in the energy industry. And for some people, that career path can seem unconventional. I want to explore that today. So to explore how a career offshore might mean a career jump that's somewhat unconventional, I reached out to Jordan Sweeney, industrial lead account partner at IBM. I wanted her to share her thoughts on being a hiring manager. Also going to learn from her wisdom as a woman in tech, knowing that there are many similarities that women face regardless of the industry that they're in. Welcome, Jordan, to the Women Offshore podcast.
Thank you, Allie. I'm so excited to do this. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, I'm really glad you are here. And I'm so excited to learn from you and the amazing career you've had. And throughout founding Women Offshore, I've really been interested in learning about various career paths that women take. Sometimes they go offshore for a few years and pivot to a shoreside role. And with that, sometimes that shoreside role is even outside the maritime industry. So working at IBM could mean a career path for someone who has offshore experience and is making that transition onshore. How would the skills from offshore support a career at IBM?
gosh, there's so many, I think, technical skills, industry-based skills. I think that being a woman who has worked offshore, there's being a hiring manager, I think could talk about so many different things that you all have done and ways that you all have applied your own leadership skills and maybe what I, because I'm a woman, I can call women's skills. But first, before I go into all of those and how I would interpret it, I told you, Allie, I might ask you a question. So tell me, like, if you were going to present yourself as a woman who has, let's say, done 2 years offshore, what might be some of like the big, let's just say maybe it's offshore engineering, I don't know, but like what would be some of the big day to day, like if you were going to take me through a day in the life of you offshore, what is a day for you like?
Yeah, a day for me is going out on deck for 12 hours. I'll get a lunch break midway through, but most of the day I'm out on deck. No matter what the weather is, I'm prepared. I have to adapt to different parts of the operation. Every day looks very different out there. So I have to have an open mind to how the day's going to go and be very flexible with changes and then have some knowledge and experience to get the tasks done.
Yeah. So even that right there, that sets you apart in terms of me as a hiring manager, in terms of me just as a leader in, like you call it, an onshore type of job. That right there sounds, first of all, so cool and so exciting to me. But second of all, I just read so many different skills into that. So I read that you have resilience built into you because you're physically, mentally, vocationally, and probably emotionally being tested every day.
Oh yeah. And absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Right. But like, and you're still getting the job done. And so normal jobs simply require you to be maybe on calls, you're having to meet a deadline, but generally like you're pretty comfortable, like you're sitting down. You can stand if you want to work standing, but like you're sitting down behind a computer or maybe you're even driving somewhere, but generally you're pretty safe and you're pretty comfortable. But right then, right off the bat, I read in that this woman knows how to be uncomfortable and get a job done, which is huge. But not only that, I read that this woman has to be prepared every single day and not just prepared for the things that she knows about, but be prepared to almost like be an astronaut in the sense of like, what if something goes wrong? I have to be prepared to react, to adapt, and probably be creative, right? Every single day in how I troubleshoot, how I problem solve. So these are huge skills that when it comes to, I don't want to talk negatively about like generally the workforce, right? But these are skills that are really difficult to find in your average, you know, 5-10 year type of employee. It's really difficult because we, and I should say we, because I haven't experienced what you guys have, what you ladies have, we haven't had to deal with that many variables and still get a job done. So there are definitely what I would call like technical skills, which are these types of skills that you just have to bring to work every single day. Of course, engineering or operations or whatever sort of your vocation that you're actually applying on in your offshore career, of course, that's relevant as well in, for me, in how I can then translate that to my client or to my business or to my portfolio. So if you, for example, were in oil and gas offshore, then it might be useful for you to look for maybe a company. So like IBM, we operate and serve oil and gas clients. And we operate in that space and have for quite some time, and we're growing that space. But in terms of industry knowledge, people who can talk to engineers, facilities managers, operations managers, SVPs, and talk their language in terms of our oil and gas clients, you know, we're always looking for people who have that kind of industry knowledge. And so you can right off the bat, just from what you told me, I can leverage your technical skills and I can leverage your industry skills just right off the bat. But then I can also leverage your leadership skills. And leadership to me is like the I don't know, the golden rainbow unicorn that like you just hope falls into your lap one day and you're like, this woman is a leader. And like, it's not something that you can teach. It's really difficult to become a leader and to grow as a leader. But as I'm sure many of the women that listen to this podcast, as I'm sure all of them know, adversity creates sort of by force, creates leaders. And adversity does a lot of things to a person, and a lot of them really great after you've come out on the other side. And so working in a difficult environment like you ladies do every day, I know that you have the ability to lead. I know that you, like I said, you can react in the moment. You can be creative. You can be proactive. I know that you're agile. You have flexibility and agility in you. You can work with other people. My goodness, you're probably surrounded by mostly men. And so you're then having to not only deal with sort of being in a minority in many regards, but you're also then, you're going to be a leader amongst a bunch of men, which again, this isn't like the 1920s, so it's not unheard of, but that still requires a lot of self-awareness, and it requires a lot of leadership and sort of confidence in a woman to say, like, I'm out here in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the ocean. Definitely, you know, there's probably some other women around me, but not a lot. And I'm uncomfortable physically, probably. I'm uncomfortable vocationally, maybe, because I've had a really difficult day. Yet, I still need to rise up and be a leader. And so that's kind of, I feel like, again, those are leadership skills. And they're also like what I call women's skills, which is that you've been a woman and you've been a professional woman. And that takes a lot, because it is hard to be a woman in the workforce a lot of times. And you ladies are doing that, but then in really difficult working conditions. So again, I can't say it enough, just by having like a very basic day in the life conversation with a potential employer, that person, that hiring manager, that interviewer will already start to read into your career all of these different skills. And it's incredible.
Yeah, you got so much out of just a few sentences out of me.
Yeah, I know. And I've never been offshore. I mean, I've been like on a boat, you know, and I can still see the land.
Yeah. And I love what you touched on, especially the resilience part, because as a woman going offshore, you're going to walk into a room where people don't want you to even exist in that room with them.
Yeah.
And to have the confidence and feeling comfortable in your own skin, or at least seeming that way, it takes a lot. And that's a skill set that many people don't have. And something that I think is important for an employer to recognize is that resilience part. Like, you're bringing in someone who knows how to get back up and does that every single day, most likely.
Absolutely. And it's also like very interesting coming from, like, I think a lot of women who are coming from maritime careers will find it interesting coming to, again, like a less, you know, physically demanding job, or even a job where that's not the culture necessarily, where it's not, and I'm going to say it's not the culture outright, because there's always pockets of that kind of culture in places. But generally, you're coming to, especially in sort of corporate America, you're coming to a place where, you know, there's value, and people see value in diversity of opinion. People see, I mean, I can't tell you how many people I know who have talked about, and these are men, mind you, so shocking. They talk about how they just really, really want more women on their team, because like, women think differently. Women are more efficient. We talked about that a little bit earlier offline, how women are so efficient. And again, I'm really efficient. I'm a mother. I'm a woman. I do all sorts of things throughout the day, but I don't have to work like in a dangerous and perilous environment every day and watch where I walk. Like, you guys are literally having to watch where you walk all the time. I mean, that right there just tells me, again, it's like your opinion, your critical thinking on my problem onshore is, or shoreside, as you said, shoreside is like, if I can get that kind of brain that is like able to, I just feel like you guys have spidey sense. You're walking around, you know, where like there's water over here, there's metal over here. I need to stay over here. This dude thinks that I'm weird. I got to get out of this. I got to lead here. I got to troubleshoot this. And also, here's my job. And what if I actually like had a fight with my husband or what, you know, you're dealing with all this stuff. If I can get that brain on my problem of like, how can I grow revenue on my account?
Yeah.
You know, it just all of a sudden is like, I'm getting so much more horsepower just by nature of what you all have had to do for your career. So I think you guys are badass.
Ah, thanks. So you bring up something really important about men or companies wanting to hire women onto their teams. And we know looking back in the 1970s and 1980s, women made remarkable progress towards positions of power and authority, but that has slowed. That slowed considerably in the 1990s and has unfortunately stalled in this century. So, as a woman who has climbed the corporate ladder, what motivates you and what skills do you rely on?
Well, truly, what motivates me is God and my family. That's a really big, like, that's a really big part of who I am. It drives every single thing that I do. And it helps me to balance. Like, I do feel that whatever your priorities, if it's not, you know, if you don't have a family and your priorities are maybe relationship, traveling, whatever it might be that you sort of say, these are the things that really motivate me to go to work every day. I do feel like women have a good sense of balance in terms of perspective. I see a lot of times in my everyday life that the biggest divas in my life are men. And, you know, they're the ones that are just freaking out about things, worrying about things, sort of acting out their feelings. And women, well, of course, we just get things done, but we also, I think, are able, because of how, you know, we think and how we operate, I think we're able to keep proper perspective. So I think perspective is a really important thing when it comes to setting out on your career, whether it's a new career or just starting your career, changing careers. But for me, work-wise, what motivates me is it's all about teams for me. So it's all about working on teams, developing teams, and leading teams. And I think that this is for me, so that's my driver. But I was an athlete in college. I've always loved being a part of a group of people driving toward the same goal. And when I first started out in sort of the corporate world, I was really nervous about like expressing my passion for people and for teams, because I felt like it was a very feminine and very obvious thing. Like, oh, of course a woman wants to invest in people. Why isn't she,
yeah,
you know, I was very insecure.
Falls into a stereotype.
Right. And I was very insecure about it because I thought, well, I don't want to be a stereotype. So I guess I need to try to double down on a hard skill like finance or negotiation, or I guess sales, even though now that I've done sales forever, I would never classify it as a hard skill. But I thought, well, I need to do something that's not, you know, quote, womanly, because I don't want to just get boxed into this stereotype. And what I realized throughout the course of my career so far is that I do myself and the companies that I work for a disservice when I try to be something that I'm not.
Oh, yes.
And so
authenticity.
Right.
So important. And
so authenticity, being yourself, being genuine is the most beneficial thing that you can do and that you can bring to your employer. And so in terms of the skills that I lean on, it's myself. I know that sounds really maybe weird, but that is what I do, is I try to show who I am, not only to the teams that I work with, but to my employer in general. I try to bring the things that I'm passionate about to work and be passionate and be actively passionate about those things and not worry about this is weird, but looking like a woman, or, you know, falling into those stereotypes, because again, like I said, employers should value women and the things that we bring, irrespective of whether or not it is stereotypical or divergent.
Yeah. Authenticity, it's very hard, especially if you don't have role models or women within your organization where you can see them going down their career paths, and you're just trying to figure out where you belong and how do you be your authentic self. If you even can, as a woman in the workforce, you're often getting a lot of unwanted advice on how to act, how to dress. So to hear you say that, hey, I'm going to be myself and I'm going to bring the skill sets that I have naturally are the ones that I've learned to the table to contribute, and that it's accepted, not just accepted, but it's wanted. That's really refreshing.
Oh, yes. It's so funny that you mentioned the dress code thing too, because that is also something that I actively, and I didn't have a female mentor until much later in my career. And I didn't have a mentor at all when I entered the workforce. But because I was so concerned about being perceived a certain way or taken seriously or whatnot, I made an active choice that I never wore a skirt or a dress. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
It's like it's like the strangest thing, but we as women feel like everything that we do or say or wear is scrutinized and is sort of used to prejudge us or to put us in a box or a stereotype us. And so now I'm like all about wearing frilly, pretty things, because I'm like, you know what? This is what I want to wear. And I like it. And I'm confident enough now that I know that I can negotiate a really difficult deal. I can tell someone that they're full of it. I can tell someone that they messed up, screwed up, missed a deadline, whatever. Or I can lead a team, be supportive and nurturing and lift people up. And it doesn't matter what I wear.
Yeah. And there's some interesting facts around that, right? And women who wear makeup, women who are blonde, tend to make more money. I wonder if wearing a skirt or wearing pants, like, what does that look like? Like,
yes.
There's some unfortunate truths to women in the workplace, and how we present ourselves could mean a higher salary.
Yes.
And that's unfortunate.
Yeah. It's so weird because, like, you should just be comfortable at work. I mean, again, I go back to like, there are people like yourself, like you and your listeners, who actually have to wear certain things every day at work because of safety and just the nature of your job. And for those of us who have the luxury of being able to choose what we wear, it's like, we should just be able to choose what we wear.
Yeah. And when you work in a very male dominated environment and you say, braid your hair one day or put on some makeup because it just makes you feel good and that's what you want to do. And, you know, you've been out there for weeks or months and, you know, maybe you don't even know when you're going home, but in the moment you're like, hey, I want to braid my hair today. People take that sometimes as you're doing it for someone else or you're doing it for attention. And so sticking to that authenticity and kind of shutting out the noise can be really hard.
Yes. Again, going back to just, I just feel like you ladies are so incredibly resilient, and you may not even realize it until you get to a job where you're not working in those kinds of conditions. And then you guys will just be like, hiya, 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 and get everything done.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for women in the workplace? Maybe there was a challenge that you overcame recently that you can share with us?
Yeah, gosh, there's so much. But I would definitely, I mean, we talked about being genuine, which I think is, and that's difficult, but trying so hard to stay true to yourself and be you, I think is really important. Other just like random advice that I would give is to really, one, to find other women to pour into and to have pour into you. I did not take that advice early on. Like I said, I didn't have a female mentor. I didn't have a lot of women around me. Maybe this is typical of maritime ladies as well. I'm not sure, but I was one of those ladies or girls that always had a lot of guy friends and not a lot of female friends. And so it felt like, well, why do I need women coworkers? Or like, why do I need to connect with my women coworkers? Or why do I need to know women who have had a baby while they've been, you know, on their career path or whatever? And I sort of dismissed it as just, oh, that's silliness. But it's so important. So definitely finding other women that you can connect with, even become friends with, and just pour into them and have them pour into you is really important. I think finding female and male mentors is really important, because it's really good to hear from both a woman who you can really relate to, but also a man who obviously thinks like a man and can give a really good balance. But in terms of personal experience, because I know you asked about that, I have a 15-month-old baby. Actually, he was born 2 weeks before the world ended and shut down. And he's so much fun. We had a very different 2020. My husband and I had a very different 2020 than everyone else, because he was just such a bright light in all of the craziness and all the sort of darkness and sadness around. So we actually had a pretty good year last year having our first baby. But, you know, and it goes to a piece of advice that I would give women, which is really be honest about what you want and be honest about what you are and are not willing to do. When I came back, I was very nervous about having a baby. In fact, when I was pregnant, I didn't tell anyone that I worked with. I'm an athlete as well. And so I really didn't look like I was pregnant until I was about 32, 33 weeks pregnant, which is, you're almost done. So I was hiding it. And I was really worried to tell anyone because I just didn't know what that would mean for my career. And I didn't know what it would mean for my account. And it was all unknown. And it was actually because of talking to other women who had, you know, had babies that I sort of came to a much healthier place about going on maternity leave. So when I came back from maternity leave, of course, there's nothing I think that can prepare you for having a baby. And just every mommy is different. And so I thought I would be one way, of course. I thought I would be one way before I had my son. And then as soon as I met him, I instantly became like an attachment mommy. And I was like, I'll never put him down. And I just was like, this is amazing. I love him so much. I can't believe that he's here. And I just want to spend as much time with him as possible, which is great, because that's why we had a baby. Anyway, so I get back to work, and it's all about, what can you sign up for now, Jordan? So you're back, you had the baby, and we're done, right? Like, you're done. You had the baby. And so now let's re-engage and double down and all this kind of stuff. And it really felt like, and IBM is a fantastic place to have a baby, by the way. So supportive. So just so many benefits that we have. I'm so incredibly lucky to work at IBM. But my point is that even people who supported me having a baby, you come back and they just go, okay, well, you're done having the baby. And I had to stand up for myself and say, and for my son, and I had to say, hey guys, I know that these are our, you know, our normal working culture is you take a call anytime, you can take meetings at 6 o'clock in the morning, the sort of fluidity of our working hours and just how we operate is you're kind of, you know, during the week, you're all in. And I had to set boundaries for myself and for my son and my husband. And I said, I'm going to work core hours, 8 to 5. And I am going to be hyper productive because moms are like 7,000 times as efficient as everyone else. And I had to stand up and just say, I want to spend my time outside of work as a mother and with my son and with my husband. And I'm not going to compromise that. And so you're going to get everything that I have 8 to 5 and nothing that I have outside of that. And that was really scary for me. It was so scary to say that. I had like 5 men call me when I sort of like said that multiple times to different people. And I had like 4 or 5 guys call me and say, we are so incredibly impressed that you said that kind of, and I was like, what? And they were like, first of all, that is just excellent that you even had the courage to say that. And second of all, like, we applaud what you're doing as a mother. And like, I can't, I was just like, what?
That's so interesting, because I would kind of expect the opposite reaction.
You would expect the opposite, right? Like when the first guy called me, I thought, oh no, here it comes. And he complimented me and said, and it's funny too, because you know, we're all in different phases of having children who are grown or children who are young and babies and whatnot. And one of the guys actually told me, he said, you know, I forgot. And he said, I actively forget my children are 15, 16 years old. And he said, I forget what it is like to have babies. And I can't imagine being a mom who does this job. He said, I was a father when my kids were babies, obviously. Dude, I'm a father. But like, it was hard as a dad. He's like, you're a mom, you're doing this job. I can't imagine how difficult that is. You reminded me it's really hard to have babies, and I'm going to do everything I can to help you if you need anything between those hours that you're not able to work. And I was like, wow, that was like a really groundbreaking thing that I stuck up for what I want out of my career, which is, you know, there's no limitation. There shouldn't be a limitation for me because I'm a mother, because I only work 45 hours a week, or because, you know, I'm hyper efficient in those hours. There shouldn't be any consequences or limitations placed on me because of it. And it was really cool to do that. I felt so great about it without anyone saying anything. And then to hear from my colleagues that like, wow, that took a lot of courage and that took a lot of like gumption to say that, and to say that so publicly. And so it was, you know, you're so forthcoming about it. And I was like, guys, I didn't become a mother. Those were my motivations. I didn't become a mother so that I could work 6 to midnight. I made a choice, and I believe that I can still have whatever career I want to have and still also do the motherly things that I want. So it was really fun. It was a really amazing experience to do that, having had a baby so recently, and I was so nervous about it. So
good. And then to be with an employer who supports that decision.
Yes.
And just think about the women coming after you who you can mentor on how you make that ask.
Yes.
But maybe making that ask is easier because you did it first.
Yeah. It looks different, I think, for everyone too, because just because a woman becomes a mother doesn't mean that she only has to work certain hours, because I know some of the greatest moms that I know are like, I need time away from my kids and I need more. You know what I mean? Like, so some mothers might be asking for, or putting, you know, putting boundaries and limitations around other areas of their life, or in other ways, even putting boundaries around your children or around your family. That, like, my point is simply that we as women do so much. And even when you're not a mom, women in general are just like, I just feel like we're the workhorses, right? Like, we are doing so much. We are so productive. We are constantly helping each other and other people. And like, we can be honest and forthcoming about what it is that we want out of a relationship with an employer. And you can outline it that clearly. And you should be encouraged that that is something that you can do. And it will be liberating, because I think that people are ready to hear that women can stand up for themselves and can say, I want this, I don't want this.
Yeah. Oh, it's so motivating and inspiring. And I love this concept of, you have to figure out what's best for you and your family, and then create those boundaries. I guess if you were at an employer that said, no, you are expected to answer emails and work outside your hours, what would you have done?
Oh, man, that's a good question, Allie. If they would have said that, I think I would have like not let it go. I would have continued that conversation in working hours. in my current working hours, I think I would have not let that go because it is not something that was defined explicitly before I went on maternity leave. And so that I think is so like therein lies to me the difference between like the career that you have right now, where there's a lot of probably definition around, like you said, your 12-hour shift and the expectations of you during that time. Most jobs and most kind of careers shore side, there's not as much, I would say typically not as much of that kind of structure of what maybe every 12 hours is going to look like, or every even maybe hour within your 12 hours. There's typically some flexibility and some room to work around, because especially in the environment that we're in right now, where people are working from home, and I think that just work in general is changing so much because of what everyone went through last year. There's a lot more of, I mean, even now, there's a lot more understanding from everyone, including clients, including the people at the very, very top of large corporations, that like, oh, sorry, guys, I have to go on mute because the lawn guy is here, or, you know, hey, there's a plumber at my door, or my baby is screaming in the background. Sorry, guys, give me just 2 minutes. There's a lot of, which goes to that kind of being authentic and genuine point that we talked about earlier. I think shore side now, where I'm starting to see a lot more encouragement of just accepting people where they are and accepting people in the life that they have, because a happy employee who's motivated and satisfied with how they work is going to be a more productive employee. And so there's a lot more flexibility there. And like IBM, again, IBM has done, I think, blazed so many trails when it comes to flexible working conditions. This isn't necessarily a promotion, you know, like, hey, come join IBM, but if you want to, call me. But companies like IBM and looking at companies like IBM, companies who have put so much into quality of life for their employees, into benefits for their employees, not just salaries, but the whole package of what you get. Again, they're just pushing, I think, the rest of the world and the rest of sort of large and mid-sized companies toward really placing a lot more value on people's lives and on their quality of life when they come to work.
People are going to be so motivated to see what kind of career they can get at IBM after this. So.
Hey, look me up.
Yeah. So one last question for you to wrap this up. Really, is there anything else you would like to share with us? I really appreciate you coming on the show.
I think the thing that I would share, maybe just as an encouragement for any of my fellow linear thinkers out there and type A controlling ladies, is I got a really great piece of advice from my dad, actually, when I was really, really young, but it stuck with me and it applies to careers. I feel like a lot of times we talk about moving up and climbing higher in our careers and all these kinds of things. And there's even just the words that we use, we correlate success in our career to upward mobility. And it creates a conversation in our own minds, again, especially for those who are type A like me, it creates this conversation in your mind that your career is sort of, it is that you start at, like, if you're on a graph, right, you start at 0, 0 on your XY axis, and you're just moving up at the same slope, at the same angle. For those of you who forgot algebra, you know, you're just moving in the same direction and it's seamless. If you deviate from that line, you are not moving up and you are not successful. And I just want to I shattered that image in my own mind years ago, and I just call that out as false. And I don't even talk about moving up. I don't talk about climbing. I don't talk about career progression in that sense, because the reality is that everyone's career looks wacky. If you were to plot it out on a graph, it would probably look more like a spider web and less like a line. And there would be places where you just feel like you're stuck for like 3 years. And then there would be like a weird loop and a curly Q and all sorts of weird stuff. And that is the beauty of your career. Everything that you do in your career is additive to your future. And because you're going to be a wonderful leader of a woman who is going to take advantage of every situation and every opportunity that you have, you're going to maximize your learning in every environment that you're in, and you're going to continue to grow yourself. And if you do that, then every next step that you take is like worth what you have done in the past, because you're adding to your resume, you're adding to your list, and most importantly, you're becoming a better version of yourself, which is ultimately the only thing that I care about when I hire someone, is what are you bringing to me as the employer? What is it about you that makes you tick, that's so special that you're going to bring to work every single day? So I would just encourage all you ladies, don't think about your careers in a straight line. However they take you, whatever curves and twists and stops and starts it takes you on, just be encouraged that you are continuing to grow and you're incredibly valuable. All the experience that you've had is going to add value to your career.
Thank you so much, Jordan. You are amazing. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Allie.
Before you go, here are some events on deck from my colleague Savannah at the Oil and Gas Global Network.
Hey everybody, it's Savannah from OGGN, and here are the events on deck for August 2021. This month we have 5 events, but if you'd like the full list, you can click the link in the show notes to sign up for our events newsletter. We send it out every month, and it includes more info about the events I talk about here. We even include events that occur 2 months ahead of time, so if you're interested in always staying in the loop about oil and gas events, make sure to check that out. This month, OGGN will be hosting our monthly happy hour at the Cannon in Houston, Texas on August 26th. Our July happy hour was a hit, so if you weren't there for the last one, we hope to see you there this month. At this event, you'll be able to meet some of OGGN's hosts, network with other oil and gas industry professionals, all while enjoying great food and drinks. Other than OGGN's events, we have 3 in-person events and 1 hybrid in-person and online event. First up, we have our 3 in-person events, the first being OTC, or the Offshore Technology Conference, at NRG Stadium in Houston, Texas, from August 16th to the 19th. Next, we have the IPAA Leaders in Industry Luncheon at the Petroleum Club of Houston on August 17th. And lastly, we have the 2021 Connected Plant Conference at the Renaissance Hotel in Austin, Texas, from August 30th to September 2nd. Other than our 3 in-person events, we have our hybrid event, which is NAPE, or the North American Prospect Expo. Now, this summit is a hybrid event because it's both online and in-person. The in-person portion of the event will be from August 18th to the 20th at the George R. Brown Convention Center, while the online portion of the event is from August 9th to September 3rd. If you have any questions about these events or any podcasts within the Oil and Gas Global Network, make sure to reach out to me through my email in the show notes. That's all for August. I hope you guys have a great month, and thanks for tuning in.